to the KTEP Book Club on Perspectives. I'm your host, Louis Sines. And joining us today is New York Times bestselling author Steve Barry. Steve's new book, new novel, is The Patriot Threat. And it's very timely because it came out around the time of tax season. And of course, this is about deals with the 16th Amendment, which is about the income tax. But before we get into all of that, we'd like to welcome Steve to our show. Steve, thank you very much for being with us. And I think this is your fourth time with us.
It is. It's great to be back with you.
Thank you. Now, let's talk a little bit, first of all, about your writing, because a lot of people think this guy is really good or this lady's really good. And they think perhaps that maybe, you know, you wrote a novel and all of a sudden the next day it was accepted. But you struggled. I think you had something like 85 rejections. Ah, gosh.
It's one of those things you don't really like to remember, but you need to remember. It's good to remember those things. I didn't write my first word till I was 35 years old, and I didn't sell my first word till I was 47 years old. So there was 12 years in there where I was writing and didn't sell. I wrote 8 manuscripts during that time, and 5 went to New York publishing houses, and they were rejected 85 times between them. So it was on the 86th time, 12 years after the fact, that finally the Amber Room was bought by Random House. So yeah, my road to success was a very long one. In the end, it worked out well. It worked out the way it should have. It would have been nice if it could have happened maybe a few years earlier than 12. But in the end, it's come along okay. Each book since 2003 has built on the one before it, and now we've built a pretty solid audience around the world.
You mentioned that you didn't start writing until you were 35. And, of course, you've done some writing, but legal writing, because you're an attorney. But what prompted you to start writing at the age of 35?
That every writer has. I had a little voice in my head that told me to write. And every writer I've ever met or have ever known has the same little voice in their head. And it kind of drives you crazy. It doesn't tell you to write a bestseller and sell a bunch of books or anything like that. It just says, please sit down and write. And I ignored that little voice for about 10 years. So it was probably a good 10 years there. I tried to ignore it. Finally, I couldn't ignore it any longer. And prior to the time that I started writing, you know, what I was a reader. So, you know, every writer I've ever known was always a reader. So I was reading and thinking about it, and that little voice was nagging at me. And then finally one day I said, okay, little voice, you win. And I gave in. And to this day, that little voice is what keeps driving me forward.
Some people would probably say, well, you know, Steve Barry is an attorney, and he was surrounded by legal things. So why doesn't he write legal thrillers, kind of like John Grisham?
Because you never, ever, ever write what you know. That is really horrible advice. It's advice you should never adhere to. Instead, you write what you love. Now, if what you know and what you love are the same thing, that's wonderful. But in my case, it wasn't. I was a trial lawyer. I did thousands of cases, divorces, criminal defense, you name it. But I just didn't want to write about it. What I loved was action, history, secrets, conspiracies, and international settings. That's what I really enjoyed. And so when I started writing, I gravitated to what I love. And so when I teach writing now around the country, I always tell students, you know, please, please, please don't write what you know. You know, instead, focus on what you love.
You love history, and you and your wife had started something called History Matters. It's a special foundation dedicated to historic preservation. Can you tell us a little bit about how this works, Steve?
We created the foundation about 6 years ago when we recognized a need for historic preservation funds around the country, because there's just no money out there to preserve our history. It's all gone, and local communities have to do this on their own. So we created History Matters, and we've done now maybe 70 or so projects around the country. We've raised right at $1 million for various historic projects. And we do it in a variety of ways. We'll go into a community and maybe we'll do a dinner where you pay to come and all of that money goes to the project. Or we do a luncheon or we do a meet and greet. Or we teach a writer's workshop where we teach the craft of writing for 4 hours. It's an incredible workshop. We've taught around 2,700 students, and you buy your way in with a contribution, all of which goes to the historic project. We don't charge to come. We don't charge expenses. In fact, I pay my own way to go to all of those. So every dime we raise goes to the project. And we found it as a great partnership with local communities. We'll be doing about 5 events while we're on tour this year during April. We will be in April. We're going to be all over, and we're going to be doing those around the country in Pittsburgh, in Iowa, in St. Augustine, Florida. We'll be doing one, and we're going to be raising money for quite a few projects around the country.
We're visiting with Steve Berry. Steve is the New York Times bestselling author of various novels. The latest one is called The Patriot Threat, and he has 10. This is the 10th in the Cotton Malone series. He also has 4 standalone novels and other stories that we'll talk about in just a minute. But when I'm talking about Cotton Malone, and I think we touched upon this last time we spoke, I don't remember. Is this kind of like your alter ego, maybe?
Well, yeah, I would say so. When I created Cotton in the Templar Legacy, I sort of modeled him after me because I didn't know if he was going to get to stay around or not. You never know. You hope he will. So I used my personality traits. So there's a lot of me in there. Now, of course, I don't do the things he does. I don't jump out of planes and shoot guns and all those things that he gets to do. But as a person, he's a lot like me. So, yes, I would say he's very much the alter ego.
You mentioned the Templar Legacy, and NPR in 2010, 5 years ago, did a survey, and they named Templar Legacy as one of the top 100 thrillers ever written.
Yeah, that was quite a thing. I was a little, that's one of those things you kind of like go, wow, that's pretty cool. But they did a survey. They ran a survey across the country, and they came up with 100 books, and the Templar Legacy made it in there.
And this is where you introduced Cotton Malone, correct?
Yeah, this is where you first got to know him. He's grown a lot in the 10 books since then. There's a lot of changes that have come in his life. Now, the cool thing about the series, I do not write it where you have to read it in order, because that's annoying to me as a reader, so I don't want to do it to someone else. If you read them in order, you might recognize a few things, but if you didn't read them in order, there was nothing in there that would aggravate you, that like you missed something. So it's very important that I try to have each book kind of stand on its own, but together they form a series.
Would you say perhaps, Steve, that with your books, people may read something like The Templar Legacy, and all of a sudden they get interested in finding more about the Inquisition or something like that, and they'll go do more research?
Well, that's the whole idea of novels in my genre. They combine this real-life stuff with an action-adventure. And, you know, you read the books, of course, for entertainment. That's its number one value. But it also has an informative element to it. In this book, for example, you're going to learn a lot about the 16th Amendment and how it was created, the problems associated with its creation, the legal issues associated with it, and some questions that still persist to this day. You know, we get 90% of our revenues from income taxes. Imagine if they went away. If they went away, we'd be in serious financial trouble. And so in this book, we have someone who's going to use that as what he calls the cleverest weapon of mass destruction ever.
And you bring up that point in one of the web pages. I'm not sure if this is your web page or not. But it says, what if the federal income tax is illegal? And, of course, some people go, wow, I didn't know that. And the fact that you write and you do so much research for all your books, and the Lincoln myth, the Jefferson Key, the Columbus Affair, all those, you incorporate the historical facts. And the question that the reader might have is saying, well, Steve, if you're writing historical fiction, can you fudge a little bit, or how do you stay true to the history part?
I keep it about 90% true to the history, because I found that the closer I keep it to truth, the better the reader will enjoy it. And there's 10% I have to trip up, because I am writing a novel and its job is to entertain you, so I have to trip it up just a tad. But I always put a writer's note in the back of all of my novels that tells you exactly where I tripped it up and where I didn't. What you're going to find, though, when you get to that writer's note and you read it, is you're going to think something was false and you're going to find out it's true. That's what happens more often than not, because of the fact that I keep it 90% accurate. And I use around 400 sources to write a book. For this book, I read a lot about the 16th Amendment, the income tax, the early part of the 20th century when the income tax went mainstream, and all of the things associated with it, because I wanted the reader to get a little appreciation of that along the way in this adventure.
We are visiting with Steve Berry. Steve is the New York Times bestselling author of multi-novels, Cotton Malone series, and some other standalone novels. But his latest one is called The Patriot Threat, and it deals specifically with the 16th Amendment. So let's talk about the 16th Amendment, Steve, and the fact that a lot of people say, well, what is the 16th Amendment? What is the 13th Amendment? What is the Second Amendment? They may not know that because they don't carry the Constitution with them or read it all the time. But when you explain to them, like in your novel, they're going, oh, I didn't know that. So they'll go again, as you said earlier, they'll do research on that, and they find out more about what did happen in 1913. So you got the idea for this book from someone on your book tour, is that correct?
I was doing some research on another novel, and I stumbled onto something here, and I just kind of stumbled onto it one day. There's a fellow who went around and researched all 42 states that considered the 16th Amendment back in the early part of the 20th century for ratification. And he looked at how each state ratified the amendment and saw and began to discover a pattern of improprieties in that. There's a lot of mistakes that happened, a lot of almost, well, not almost, but in some cases, actually illegal things that went on. If you void it, you only have to void six states to void the amendment, but he found problems in around 15 states. Serious legal problems that called into question their actual ratification. Now, this is nothing new, because in 1913, when the amendment was proposed and it went out for ratification, the Solicitor General of the United States wrote a legal opinion to the Secretary of State and advised him of the same thing. And he chose to ignore it. He did not take any of that legal advice. The reason why we know this is that memorandum has survived. You can actually read it, and it's quoted in the novel. And the Secretary of State at the time simply declared the amendment in effect. He did not say ratified. He said it is in effect when the requisite number of states finally voted, and he just determined each one was correct. The amendment was actually proposed by the Republicans to fail. It was designed to, it was a way for the Republicans to show people, look, we're not the party of the rich. We're going to tax ourselves, okay? We're going to put a tax on us. They actually thought it would be voted down, but it wasn't. It went on and went from state to state. But these illegalities that exist there persist to this day. I read around 30 federal court opinions, and they do not want to deal with this issue. They ignore this issue quite a bit. They don't want to go into it at all. And it's fascinating how they sort of dodge around it. And I'm not saying this is a manifesto for not paying taxes or anything like that. We're not saying that at all. But these issues made for a really interesting novel, and it was fun to explore them.
Now, in this novel, as you do in other novels, you go back and forth to modern day times, and then back to whatever period you're covering. And in this book, it opens up, if I remember correctly, when President FDR is sitting and talking with Andrew Mellon, and these gentlemen did not get along, and Andrew Mellon handed the president a dollar bill, and then he pointed something out?
That's my invention to them.
Okay.
I added that little element. The meeting itself actually did happen on December 31st, 1936, in the White House. It's the only time these two people ever met face-to-face. Mellon and Roosevelt hated each other. Despised each other. Roosevelt had Mellon prosecuted for tax evasion, a charge that Mellon was acquitted of. Roosevelt blamed Mellon for the Depression, and Mellon, of course, was Secretary of Treasury for three administrations during the 1920s, which is a feat in and of itself. He was probably the richest man in America at that time, and FDR just looked and just hated everything about him. So this meeting actually did occur, and it's the meeting where the National Gallery of Art was born, because Mellon's the one who gave the money to build the building. But I just added another little element there at the end, a little more, a different aspect to their relationship that fuels the novel and gets things going.
We're visiting with Steve Barry. Steve is the New York Times bestselling author of various novels. Cotton Malone series, that's one of his main protagonists that you probably are familiar with. But this one is called The Patriot Threat, and it deals with the 16th Amendment, and that's income tax, or the IRS. A lot of people don't like to talk about that, or sometimes they do. It depends. But with this book, you're going to find out a lot of what if or maybes. And correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but in this book, I believe that Andrew Mellon challenges the president to look deeper into this quest, and then the president doesn't get to do that because he dies.
That's my little invention that I put into there. I wondered what would happen if Mellon hated Roosevelt so bad that he wanted to leave him. To leave him something that he had to go find. In other words, he had to march to the beat of Mellon's drum, which, of course, to Roosevelt would have been just horrible because he hated the man so bad. You know, but in the end, Mellon didn't want to hurt the country. He was a patriot. That's where the title comes from, the patriot threat. He was truly a patriot. But what happens here is a North Korean begins to get involved in this, an interesting character I created, modeled after a little bit of a real-life person. The older brother of the current leader of North Korea. He was supposed to be the leader of North Korea, but he did something that embarrassed his father. He tried to sneak into Japan with one of his children to go to Disneyland, which is amazing. He got caught, and he embarrassed the former leader of North Korea, who disinherited him. And that's how we ended up with the current leader of North Korea right now. I just sort of took that and molded it over into this story. So this guy gets a chance to try to reclaim his birthright. And it's a way for a small little country like North Korea, who basically could not really cause us a whole lot of harm, it's a way that somebody could really cause us a lot of harm, because he's going after a way to cut off our money supply. And if he can cut off our income, he can bankrupt us. And it's just, as I said, one of the antagonists of the novel calls it the cleverest weapon of mass destruction ever. And this may be, it's an interesting way. You don't have to destroy someone with bombs or bullets. Sometimes you can do it simply with laws.
It's interesting what bans the young man from becoming the leader, and as you mentioned, sneaking into Japan to go to Disneyland. And people go, wait a minute. What's wrong with going to Disneyland? But then it gets you thinking also about the fact that the way these people think, the way his father thought.
Yeah, it's a problem if you're the head of North Korea. He would consider that a sign of weakness. And this older brother was a bit weak, too, by the way. He was not a very strong person at all. And he did dumb things like that. His father disinherited him. It's very important that the leader of North Korea have the respect of the army. He cannot rule without the military. He has to have the military behind him. And the Kim family has always had that. And so this is all explored in the book. I was very interested in North Korea. It's a fascinating society. This book also gives me an opportunity to explore the North Korean death camps, which still exist to this day. 200,000 people are interred in these camps, and they're horrible, horrible places. And the reader here is going to get a first look at what those are like.
We're visiting with Steve Berry. Steve is the New York Times bestselling author of various novels. The latest one is The Patriot Threat, and it deals with the 16th Amendment and President Franklin Roosevelt and Andrew Mellon and the income tax and the fact that, there are a lot of hidden secrets, and it makes you want to dig in and find out, did they properly ratify this amendment? Are we allowed to pay taxes? Is it wrong? And, we're not going to give the story away, but it's up to you to follow this. And as you mentioned, Steve, earlier, the fact that you introduce this Korean leader and the role that he's playing, it also shows you what goes through the mind of some of these relatives of dictators or would-be dictators, and how they have to struggle if they don't follow their own rules.
Yeah, well, they have, it's really amazing. Dictators have their problems too. They actually do have problems, particularly a leader like someone in a close society like North Korea. This guy, I mean, look at our current leader of North Korea. That's not a very impressive person you're looking at all there. He's not someone who's, who inspires people to rally behind him. That leadership and that is based on fear. It's all based on it's a society based in totally in fear. And, you have to command the respect of people. They have to be afraid of you. And in this case, the older brother was deemed not capable of doing that. And in my case, my antagonist is similar that way. But he's trying to redeem himself. He's trying to give himself back one more time. But, they have inherent weaknesses inside them. And, one of the things about a thriller, the good guys have to have bad qualities, the bad guys have to have good qualities. There's a little bit of both in everybody, but overall, the bad guy's a bad guy. And in this case, overall, my bad guy is that way too. He's a very amoral person. in the end, he sort of meets his match in more ways than one.
Steve, let me ask you about this. I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and the fact that this book, The Patriot Threat, as we mentioned, deals with the 16th Amendment and income tax. Some people might say, well, does this book perhaps just cater to the United States and Americans and it won't do well in other parts of the country? World?
Well, it takes place overseas, basically. It takes place in Venice and Croatia is where cotton is. Cotton is basically there. And then there's another element of the story that takes place in D.C. So, no, it's an international suspense thriller in the truest sense of the word, where cotton is over there having to deal with all of this. This whole adventure takes place in 23 hours, so I was finally able to get a story under 24 hours, and everything happens really, really fast for Cotton and Stephanie and the crowd as this all begins to unfold right before their eyes, and they have to move real quickly. So it was a lot of fun to write it because there's just almost no time to take a breath.
We're visiting with Steve Barry. Steve is the author of the latest New York Times. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and the latest book is The Patriot Threat, another in the Cotton Malone. I think it's the 10th in the Cotton Malone series, but it deals with the 16th Amendment and income tax. Very interesting book, and I think some of the critics have said that this book is like 90% factual and 10% fiction.
That's what I was saying earlier. That's one of the reviewers did mention that it's it has that mixture to it, and it's interesting that he picked up those percentages because that's the kind of the percentages I've used in the past as well, and I try real hard for that, and I hope the reader when they leave here will want to learn more about the subject matter and take a look at it. There are some fascinating subjects. One in particular, here's what's really cool. You know, we've changed all the money in this country: the $5 bill, the $10 bill, $20 bill, $100 bill. We've changed them all, you know, to make them less susceptible to counterfeiting and that kind of thing. But there's an act of Congress that actually forbids us from changing the $1 bill. Right? We can't change it. It's against the law to change it. It's fascinating. You know, we explore that in the book.
That is what, in your book, Andrew Mellon hands to the president, right? Is it a dollar bill?
Yes, the old dollar bill from 1935, the old 1935 issues. And he notices something very unique on the face of the dollar bill that is still there to this day. There's a very interesting symbol that's on that dollar bill. It doesn't mean what people think it means, but it could mean something else. And so we deal with that here in the book.
Now, speaking of dollar bills, I know that you sell books worldwide, and one of the places that is selling some of your books is, I believe it's the Poison Pen. Is that where the bookseller?
Yes, that's correct.
And you're offering a special dollar bill there.
Yeah, they have a little dollar bill giveaway. It has a little, it's kind of printed out. It has some cool stuff on it from the novel. It's a little giveaway they do if you order it. If anybody wants to order that book, they can go to my website. It's there on the front page where it says order the novel. It's a little special thing we're doing with the Poison Pen.
Now, as we mentioned before, you deal a lot with, actually all your books are historical fiction. And so the reader might wonder, Steve, okay, last summer you came out with The Lincoln Myth. And this year you come out with The Patriot Threat. So they may wonder, do you have ideas on the boiling pot for coming up next? Or
sure.
Do you get the publishers telling you what to do?
Oh, no. That's up to me. It's a partnership. I come up with ideas and they say yes or no. I'm not going to write a book, you know, that I don't like, and they're not going to publish a book they don't like. So we got to find something we both like, and we do a pretty good job of coming that together. Next year's book's already finished. It's a new Cotton Malone story. It's called The 14th Colony, which is very fascinating. There was supposed to be a 14th colony, and there wasn't. And this book explores something. It deals with the Cold War. It's something coming out of the Cold War that's very interesting. And I'm writing the 2017 book now, and then I have my ideas for 18 and 19. So I'm about 3-4 years ahead of myself right now.
Wow. Well, hopefully I'll be sitting here to talk with you about these books in the future. But anyway, getting back to the Cotton Malone series and the history series, when you come up with these historical ideas as to what, how do you determine, do you have polls or something as far as like what would people like to read about, would they like to read perhaps something about contemporary history?
You have to make an educated guess, and the trick is I have to guess what you will find interesting 2 years from now. Because, see, I'm writing the 2017 book right now, which I'll turn in a year from now. So you stay a year ahead in the book business. So I actually have to kind of guess what will be interesting in 2017. And the trick is to find something that no one else is going to grab first, so because you don't want someone to write something and then it preempts what you're doing, so particularly when you're 2 years ahead of yourself. So I've got to find something original, something different, something interesting, something that interests me because I've got to write it, and then something that will interest the reader because they've got to go out and buy it and read it and tell their friends about it. So it's a matter of just sort of instinct and practice, and that's something I do between myself and my publisher. We sit down and we go through these ideas, and some are rejected, some are kept, and we sort of refine them out and just try to use our best instincts.
Tell us a little bit about Cotton Malone and perhaps what is the future for Cotton Malone? Is he going to, I mean, he's gotten older, he's changed a lot, but he's still a very strong character.
I stopped aging him, though, about 3 books ago. A lot of people haven't noticed that, which is kind of nice. I'm glad they don't notice it. I just sort of stopped aging him because he was aging naturally for a while, and then I realized, uh-oh, I've got to stop. This could go on a while, thank goodness. And so it's like Dirk Pitt, who's been around like 40-something years, and he's still kind of the same age. And so I've sort of just stopped the aging process. He's staying around 47, 48 years old and just kind of keep him there. He's going to grow. It's different. I mean, last book, he and Cassiopeia had some problems, and their relationships seemed to have ended. She is not in this novel, but she will be back next year. She is coming back, and we're not done with her and him. So with any relationship, there's ups and downs. He's growing. He's changing a little bit. There's a new character, this Luke Daniels character I introduced last year. He's back this year, and Luke will be around next year as well. I like him a lot. A lot of things are opting and changing in Cotton's world, but he kind of hangs in there. But, you know, you don't want a character to stay static. He's got to have some adjustment, and Cotton is definitely that. He's a much different man now than he was in the Templar legacy.
We all have an imagination. You know, we look at a character and we read a book and we kind of have an outline of what that character looks like. So sometimes when these books go to television or to the movies, everything changes. You're going, wait a minute, that's not the way Cotton Malone is supposed to look. So do you foresee anything like that happening to you as far as like a TV series or something like that?
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it, if they bring it? Alcon Entertainment actually optioned the Malone books to do a TV series, but I don't think anything's going to come of that. I think their option runs out soon, so I don't think they're moving in that direction. It would have been cool to see it happen. And frankly, when they go to do that, they've got to find the right star who will make the series work and the right star that can draw in the people to make it work. So they have their own constraints and their own problems to deal with. So it would be up to them to find the right person to play Cotton. His description is very general. I keep it that way on purpose, you know, so that, you know, he could be played by a variety of different people.
We are visiting with Steve Barry. Steve is the author of The Patriot Threat, and he is a New York Times bestselling author of the Cotton Malone series and some additional other books that you can go to his website or you can go to Facebook and put Steve Barry in there. You can all go to Amazon.com. And if you're interested in finding out more about reviews of The Patriot Threat or the 16th Amendment, you can, of course, Google that as well. Steve, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Sure. And just so help him a little bit, that website, steveberry.org, everything is there.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
We've been visiting with Steve Barry. Steve is the New York Times bestselling author of the Cotton Malone series and other thrillers. The latest one is The Patriot Threat. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.